perspective of how treatment should be about building up and not breaking down, and how treatment needs to focus on some of the positive things that are going on in teens or adults' lives, and how we need to build up the whole person and ensure a healthy self. So this week, we're going to change gear a little bit and put the topic on how kids get affected by narcissistic parents. So obviously, we have a lot of parents, or we see a lot of families where mom and dad are struggling with something themselves, and that is sort of being, you know, or that affects the children or the teens in a big way. So today I have invited a guest into the studio. His name is Stephen Onru, and he is a psychotherapist and a divorce mediator. He's actually been on the show before a long time ago, or some weeks ago, and we had a great conversation about some of these things, but I felt that there was so much more we needed to discuss. So I've invited him back on the show today. And welcome to the show, Stephen. Thanks for coming in today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Frederick. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
You're welcome. So, Stephen, before we start talking about narcissistic parents and how that can affect the teens and the family as a whole, Stephen, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up in a situation where you have your private practice or your divorce mediator company where you are supporting families. Tell us about yourself, about, you know, how you ended up here and what you do today. And
great. Well, thank you, Frederick. And just know that the audience can know I've been to one of your centers out there in El Monte, and I think you guys have a fantastic program. It's very, very effective, and I've met your associates. And so I'm happy to be here and help your audience in any way possible. So I've been licensed as a marriage and family therapist over 3 decades. And the past 12 years or so, I continued as a therapist, but I've focused now on divorce mediation. I've raised 3 boys. And I'm divorced myself, and so I understand how the mediation process works. I also understand as a parent all the issues about raising children in this day and age, and then really understanding some of the complexities of when kids go through a divorce. So I remember back in high school, I actually took a class on counseling my peers. Now, I had my own problems, and so it helped me kind of sort out my issues. But I look back, you know, so many years ago, and I was really always interested in helping people and counseling. And so I actually started, I didn't start the program, but I joined a program where I was counseling my peers after school. And I think since then, I went to Fuller School of Psychology here in Pasadena, and I've just gone on to the field of counseling here for most of my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you have such an interesting part, right? You're mixing your, you know, as a psychotherapist or a therapist, you're mixing that knowledge and experience with how to mediate through a divorce, right? So it's you're basically offering people to get some guidance and support throughout the process on an emotional level, but also guiding them, of course, on how to save a lot of money and avoid getting into a big expensive trial
That's
law process, right?
Because my staff and I complete the entire divorce process. In fact, a lot of my clients are attorneys, and so but they're not maybe family law attorneys. But we do the complete divorce process with pensions, a parenting plan, properties, all your assets. And I can take them through the process and create a more amicable atmosphere because I'm a therapist and because I've developed skills in negotiation. And people feel, I think, a lot safer when they're with a mediator who's trained as a therapist because we're able to handle the conflict and calm it down. We're able to take control of the conflict and say, no, this is not a part of mediation. We're not going to allow that kind of behavior. And people
know. And I just want to say to everybody who's listening out there, we see a lot of parents who are going through divorce as the teens are in treatment. And I can't stress enough how affected the teens are through these divorces, right? lawsuits, the big, from my perspective, the biggest loser is always the teens, right? I know mom and dad often are fighting to win, and they're fighting because they feel they're, it's important for them to get custody, or it's important for them to ensure the best possible life for the teens. But unfortunately, the harder you fight and the more you fight, the more the teens lose, no matter who is getting custody and who's the winner out there, right? So I think it's...
Yeah.
So, go ahead, Stephen.
What we're going to focus on in the show today is what happens when one of the parents has more of a personality disorder, in a way. Because everybody gets divorced. Not that everybody gets divorced, but every type of person gets divorced. And a lot of times I have cases where someone can be dealing with, some personality issues. And so today's topic is, what is the impact when they have a narcissistic parent? And but a narcissistic parent never apologizes. They blame everybody. They never blame themselves for responsibility. And they lack a lot of empathy in terms of how they're impacting people around them. Doesn't matter. And that's why sometimes when people go to divorce and they're fighting and it goes on and on and on, they're not actually thinking of the trauma they're creating for their children. It's very, very traumatic. But the more narcissistic a parent is, the more they're willing to fight and cause conflict, and they're not impacted by the pain of their children. And that's what's so sad and difficult. Years later, these kids are in therapy, and they've been traumatized. But the longer parents fight, the more a child is really harmed. And so one of the things that I see when a parent is overly narcissistic is that they don't apologize. Now, we make mistakes just as kids make mistakes. But when a parent can never kind of sit down and talk to the child, hold them in their hands and say, you know what, I didn't need to yell at you. I'm so sorry. Your mommy is sorry, or your daddy is sorry. I will never, do that again. I'll never yell at you. Kids need that. They need that safety and reassurance. But a narcissistic parent never does. They don't really genuinely apologize. And go ahead. Yes, Frederick.
Well, no, that's good. I mean, obviously, I would also say, and they often put blame, right? They push it out on other people. It's other people's fault. And with that blame comes a whole lot of shame. And maybe you could talk to that for a second as well.
Yeah, great. And that's a good word. The shame, the blame equals shame. So when a parent can't apologize, but they're always blaming the other spouse, the children learn that. They see that. They see that, let's say if it's mom who's a narcissist, they're seeing that dad is kind of being victimized. They don't know that word maybe, but they recognize that, dad's always in trouble or he's always getting yelled at and criticized. Well, what happens is the same behavior occurs to the child. The child never gets to be heard, and they're blamed for things that they didn't do. They're look what you did. Look what you caused. Look at the problems you just made. This is all your fault. And the child is overwhelmed. They're completely emotionally overwhelmed because they don't understand how could they have caused this problem? Why is it their fault? And as they grow, what happens then is that the more a child is falsely accused, falsely blamed, they become enraged because their power is taken away. So one example would be, not that, kids are supposed to have all the power. No, we're the parents. We're in charge, clearly. I understand about being in charge raising three boys. But there might be a situation where I would hold one of my kids and say, I'm sorry that happened. How are you feeling? And they'll tell me how they feel. Then I'll say, well, but, you can't hit your brother. And so you are going to have a timeout, or I am going to take this away from you, and you are going to have to, sit here on the couch for a while because we don't hit in this family. So you can still create discipline with love and with understanding, and you can still let them share their feelings so that later on when my teenagers would say, you're not fair, you don't get it. Yeah, Dad, you just don't understand. Eventually, the same day, I might give them that space at that moment, because when they're angry, you leave them alone, give them their space, let them have their room. And then later on, I'll approach my kids and say, tell me about that. What do you need me to understand? What don't I get? Why do you think I'm unfair? And it's that listening that empowers them, that builds their self-esteem, and that gives them a sense of identity, not that they rule the house, but that they matter and that their opinions matter.
Mm-hmm. And that, of course, brings me to the next sort of simple question. How do you often see the kids will react to this kind of dynamic at home?
Okay, great. That's a great question. You know, let's take a boy. Boys tend, when they're always frustrated and they're blamed and they don't have a voice and no one calms them down, you know, no one is soothing them. They're just yelling at them and then punishing them. So the yelling and the blaming and then the punishment, you know, creates the shame. Well, eventually they feel enraged. So one of the issues that can happen with a child, whether it's a boy or girl, they become enraged because they feel like life is unfair, the parent is unfair. Well, what they do with that rage, you know, depends upon their personality. Sometimes young women tend to turn it in on themselves and they hate themselves, and they could end up cutting themselves. So a lot of times when I had a nonprofit in Pasadena, we actually had a special program. This was a long time ago when cutting really wasn't talked about, but we had a special program. We worked in conjunction with Los Angeles Hospital for girls that were harming themselves. And oftentimes we'd find that one of the parents was a narcissist, you know, blaming and shaming and accusing this child. So girls tend to turn it against themselves. Boys tend to lash out. They start to humiliate their friends and make fun of their friends. And then, of course, someone that's not their friend, they'll bully and maybe even, you know, start a fight or something. But they have this anger inside, and they don't know what to do with it. And obviously, that can also lead to depression and drug use.
Mm-hmm. And also often the feeling of not being understood, right? I feel often we see teens who would sort of have this feeling that they're all alone in this world because nobody understands them. Yes, they're upset, and yes, they're outraged because of it, but at the end of the day, it also gives them that feeling of just being alone and feeling that nobody around them understands what they're going through. And obviously, in some of these situations, mom or dad or whoever has the narcissistic traits doesn't take that in at all, doesn't acknowledge that.
That's a really great point. When a kid feels that sense of aloneness, because there's shame involved, so they usually don't tell anyone. You know, they're not going to run to their teacher. They hardly tell anyone. Maybe their best friend, they complain, but they do turn it in, and they feel isolated because of it, and they feel, in a way, stupid. They think something's wrong with me. I must be bad. I must be doing something wrong, and then that turns into self-hatred and depression. That's why I think your program is so key. Adolescents, teenagers, when they're in a group, suddenly they feel alive because someone else has gone through it. Someone else understands them. They feel heard, and they don't feel so alone.
Yeah, that's very true, Stephen. I think, obviously you're right. It's very important that the teens get some peer support, either through a treatment program or through a church group or through some sort of community, right? Somewhere where there's other teens who are experiencing some of the same emotional pain and frustration and feeling alone and feeling that mom and dad are struggling and having somebody to talk to about it or listening to, at least, that are going through some of the same things is crucial in these processes, I think.
Yes, it really is. It's very, very crucial. And, you know, in my own situation, my boys were all three teenagers when I and my wife went through a divorce. They were 19 and 17 and 13. And, you know, how they responded and dealt with it was quite interesting. You know, they were all at different levels intellectually and developmentally. But, you know, fortunately, the older one was in college and he went back to college, and The 17-year-old is actually starting college. He just turned 18 that summer and went off to college. So my younger kid really needed a lot more support. I mean, they all needed support. But the younger one, fortunately, was involved in a community church environment where he had support. And we knew that. We made sure that he would get counseling, that he would have a youth pastor, that he would have other individuals that he could, you know, talk to. And I think a couple of his teachers know. We informed them, teachers that he was close to. So we made sure that he was taken care of and had support because he deserved it.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Stephen, I was wondering, so if a person or a parent would call you up and say, hey, look, we're about to go into we're about to get a divorce. I want a divorce. I feel my wife or my husband, my spouse is struggling with narcissism or is a narcissist or anyway, bottom line is I can't do this anymore. I'm considering, what are my options? Mm-hmm. How should this process take place? What would you typically sort of advise and how would you start that process? Maybe they have already started in court. Maybe they've already, gone down that road a little bit, but realize that, hey, maybe they need to look at other options as well. What direction would you go in? What would you advise people to do?
Well, one of the things I would mention to them is that, let's say they're in court, or even if they've retained an attorney or they want to have an attorney, but they also are thinking about mediation, I'll tell them to put their attorney on ice. Not literally, but they need to hold off. So I've said, pay your attorney by the hour. You can ask them questions, but there's no reason to give your attorney a large, retainer because you're going to mediate. If they've already done that, maybe they can get part of their money back. But I tell people, you don't have to give up your attorney, in other words. You don't have to throw them away. You can just keep them on the side. And if you want like a third eye, another opinion, that's perfectly fine. Because I represent the couple equally. And my goal is when I sit down with them is to say, we want to resolve all of your issues, your assets, and a parenting plan in a way that is fair and where each of you would leave financially stable. And we want to create an appropriate plan for your children, where they go to church, where they're in school or synagogue or the parish. But we want to look at their community, and hopefully we don't have to disrupt that community. So I just kind of laid down the groundwork. I explained the process to them, and I help get that in motion for them if they're going to move forward with either a legal separation or a divorce.
Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of parents would probably wonder, okay, look, how much does a typical divorce cost? What does it cost to go through mediation? Do you have any idea? Just, is there any numbers you could say? Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. The research over the past few decades have said that mediation tends to be a 12th or a 10th of the cost. So if you have a pretty volatile relationship, and you have children, our mediation, your divorce might cost you $8,000. Now, if it's more amicable, I've certainly done divorces for $4,000 and $5,000. But if it's a more litigious situation, when you go to court, you're going to spend close to $100,000. Now, we all know people that have gone way over that. I want to be very judicious if I ever give an illustration, but someone thought that after the date of separation, if your income increases, it does not mean that you get more alimony. Your alimony is based upon the last 3 years of your lifestyle and both of your incomes. Child support might increase, but we won't go into that area right now. But my point was that someone disagreed with me. They got some bad advice and they, believed what their attorney was saying. Ultimately, it's very rare, but I can once a year probably have a case that goes to court that leaves mediation. 2 years later, one of the parties contacted me and said, well, you were absolutely right. Alimony is not going to increase. And we've each just spent together, we've each spent almost $100,000. So
wow.
They had very good attorneys, but they, from 6 or 7 or 8,000, they went to almost, you know, 190,000. So divorce, as we know here in California, is very expensive.
Very. Well, I'm sorry. We got to take a little break here, Stephen. Thank you very much for your input so far. We will be back in a couple of minutes after a little break, and we'll talk more about, you know, sort of the profound effect on the teens and the family when there's narcissistic behaviors involved in the divorce. And Stephen will give us some more advice on how to get through a somewhat peaceful mediation process.
Yes.
And, you know, argue and fight as little as possible. So we'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you very much for listening to KHTS 98.1 FM. This is the Insight Teen Hour.
There's no combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard. No song that I could sing, but I can try for your heart. Our dreams, and they are made out of real things.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to the Insight Teen Hour. Here in the studio today, we've got Frederick Schulin, that's myself. I'm from Insight Treatment Programs. And we got Stephen Onrue, who is a psychotherapist and a divorce mediator, who is helping families that are going through a divorce and doing his best to make sure that the teens are not being affected more than absolutely needed throughout the process, and keeping the cost low of a divorce, obviously. Stephen, so we were talking a little bit about these crazy numbers on how much divorce is sometimes costing and how much money there is to be saved by going through a mediation. But I was curious, Stephen, so when you work with a family, do you sometimes work in sort of a team spirit, meaning the teens might see a therapist already, or maybe one of the spouses is already having a support system that you have to work with? Do you have to work with attorneys on the side that have been hired by the family to go through the process? Or how does that look like from your perspective? Or do you say, hey, look, come to me and I'll deal with it all. I'll see your teens, I'll see the parents.
Okay, great. Great question. And yes, it's great to be on your show. Thank you, Frederick. I appreciate your work and being here today and helping your audience. You know, I do work collaborate with other professionals. I'm not involved in counseling. When people come in for a legal separation or a divorce, it's not counseling. My role is a guide and an educator. I'm very involved. I don't make decisions for people, but I will explain consequences of some of their decisions. And I'll also explain how some of their decisions might be impossible, that, you know, there are some things that are non-negotiable. Someone has an inheritance, that's not community property. So my goal is to be a guide and assist people in very kind of an expedient manner when we go through this process. But if they are in therapy or need a referral for a therapist, I do help with that. I provide referrals for the couple, for individual counseling, and for the teens. So it is a collaborative approach. Now, if they have an attorney, just to maybe make this one point, I can't communicate with that attorney unless both of them agree. And that's because of the strict rules regarding confidentiality, regarding mediation and my license. So both areas are very strict when it comes to, you know, confidentiality. So if someone says, well, my attorney wants, you know, these documents, I would say, well, if they're in an email to both of you, you can send them. I cannot send them. So they would both have to agree. And so quite often, actually, I'm not usually in communication, not very often, with their attorneys, because they're really using their attorneys for sort of a second opinion. Now, there is a situation where there's a collaborative law that's a little more expensive, and that's where you're in a situation where there is an attorney, there are therapists, and there's a mediator, but you're paying a lot of money for a lot of different people. And many times in my situation as being a mediator, many of my clients don't have an attorney. They're not paying for an attorney. They may or may not be getting counseling. You know, they're probably paying for their kids to get counseling, and that's about the only extra cost for them that's involved. But certainly, if their business needs to be evaluated and their property, of course, you know, mediators and attorneys are not business evaluators, we're not CPAs. So we definitely collaborate with other people when necessary.
sort of very broken down by living in this environment for a long time. They want out of the family. Typically, I would imagine you would see this parent come and say, you know, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to deal with this spouse anymore. I can't handle his or hers and narcissistic behaviors. I want an attorney to take over and just do it by the rules or by the law. I don't want to mediate because I can't mediate with this person. What do you say in those situations? Is that somewhat true? Like, how do you mediate with a person who has a narcissistic behavior? Is it at all possible?
Okay, that is the golden question. How do you mediate with a narcissist? Well, that's one of my specialties. My training has been very extensive in the world of narcissism. And so I actually take on very difficult cases. I work with high conflict divorce. And that's actually why a lot of people contact me, is because as they go to my website, they see that I work in divorce mediation, where sometimes an individual is a narcissist. So it's definitely possible. It just takes a finesse. It takes a certain way of understanding and listening to that person, while at the same time letting them know reality. So because a narcissist wants to create their own reality, and I have to unfortunately kind of crash that reality and say, well, no, actually, this is the law. This is what's going to happen. Your pension is split. There's nothing else that we can do other than, if you don't want her to touch it, then you need to give her that portion of money from something else. But I work with them, and I listen to them, and I try to empathize with them, and I can. And that tends to help them join with me. So there's a joining in this process that I can help a narcissist understand that I really am trying to represent them and work with them, but there are boundaries and there are situations that are just not going to happen. There are just some things that are non-negotiable. What's interesting, though, is that when a family goes through a divorce and you have a narcissistic parent, the other parent usually asks me, what do I do? What do I say? How do I handle my kids? Well, it's kind of a tightrope. It's a little bit difficult because kids do need reality. But at the same time, you're not wanting to create a scenario where it's a good parent and a bad parent, good cop, bad cop. You don't want to be going around cutting down the other parent and saying, oh, they're horrible. They're mean to you. They're ridiculous. They're crazy. You don't want to say that to your kids. But at the same time, kids do need some reality because they're very confused. So what I would encourage, and what I have encouraged my clients when they're going through a divorce, is to be able to communicate to their kids and say, I'm really sorry that your dad spoke to you that way. That should not have happened. You don't deserve that. You're not stupid. You're a very wonderful and smart kid, and I'm really sorry that he hurt your feelings. So see, that's reality. You have to be able to say, that should not have happened. You should not have had to go through that. You should not have had that punishment, or you should not have been called that name. They do need that support and that reality, because without it, they could become, quite honestly, suicidal. Because if a parent is verbally abusing them and the other parent is not protecting them, then they feel suicidal. They feel like there's no escape. There's no way out. And it's very, very dangerous. And so I would say to the parent who asks me, what do I do? What do I say? That you have to say something. You have to talk to your child. And then you might even have to have an intervention with your spouse who's doing these things. And sometimes, you know what? Sometimes the intervention is in front of other people. Now, I get it that that's really humiliating for a narcissist. It's called a narcissistic wound. They don't want to be criticized in front of other people. But I'll be kind of vulnerable and give you an illustration. There was a situation where, how do I say it? You know, someone started to insult my children, and they were very, it just was so unfair and unreasonable, and they were quite young. And I stood up and I intervened. I stopped it, and I said, this can't go on. We're not going to allow this, you know. And I allowed them to leave the room. Well, my wife at the time was very angry and very upset with me. And so I let her talk, and she talked and talked and talked to me. And I ended up by saying, well, when this happens again, I'm going to do the very same thing. And so what that was an intervention, and it's a consequence. And so I think there's times that you must protect your children. You have to stand up for them if someone is abusing them, verbally or anyway, especially, you know, physically hitting them or something. You've got to intervene. And then there's a consequence. Yes, I'm going to do this from now on. If this happens again, I'll call your mother or the police. One of their parents might be worse than the police. But you're setting a consequence. It's just like if your kids start smoking pot, you ground them. You take their car away. You take their phone away, you know? There's consequences. And so if a parent is a narcissist and they're harming the children and saying things they shouldn't say, you have to, number one, talk to your child, listen to them, care about their feelings. Number two, you have to step up. You have to step in. You have to stop it. And number three, there has to be a consequence.
Mm-hmm. But obviously, well, sorry, I shouldn't say but.
Yeah.
Reality is that this is a very, very, very tough balance, right, as a parent to do. And
yeah.
That's why I think it's so important that parents have support from somebody like yourself as they're balancing through this act, right, as they're going on this tightrope.
It is a tightrope because you're right. They feel like, well, you know, the parenting books and the happy, happy marriage books always talk about, you know, don't fight in front of the kids and don't argue in front of them. And it's wonderful that these, you know, marriage books have all this great advice, but a lot of times it just doesn't fit. That if someone's being verbally abused, you don't wait till the next day to then intervene. You have to intervene then at the moment. And that is the tightrope because, you're not wanting to you're not intentionally trying to humiliate the other parent. You don't want to do it intentionally.
No. And you certainly don't, as you said, you certainly don't want to sort of badmouth, right, the other parent or the spouse unintentionally or in the wrong way. You really want to be coached and trained on how to do this in a way so that we don't build up additional shame and in a way so that it is a healthy boundary that's being set and some healthy consequences, right? Because obviously we can all imagine here on this call today, we can all imagine how sort of disruptive or how damaging it can be if you don't do this in the healthy way, right? It can easily be damaging to set consequences and set boundaries to a narcissistic parent if you do it the wrong way, so to speak.
Right, that's right. And can you think of it in a way? What's interesting is if you have a child that's kind of out of control, when they're given too much power, they're overwhelmed. They want to rule the house, but they don't really. When you have a teenager yelling and swearing at their parents, that's kind of outrageous. But some families have that, where the teenager's kind of taking charge. They actually don't want all that power. They really need some boundaries and guidance. And so I think, in a way, sometimes the out-of-control, raging, narcissistic parent, kind of like a child, they actually want someone to step in maybe and have a consequence or an intervention and say, you know, we can't do this. This can't happen. And I think sometimes in the moment it might be humiliating to them, but I think ultimately it's also providing more safety in the home.
Yes, I can definitely concur. I can support the idea that parents need to protect their kids sometimes, right? They need to be the parent and say, hey, we can't take this. Sorry, you need to leave the room, my son, and I will deal with that on this right now. Good. I know we need to go into another little break here. Thank you for listening out there. You're listening to KHTS 98.1 FM. This is the Insight Teen Hour. I hope you feel that we're putting out some good information today on the show with Stephen Onuru here. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
There's no combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard. No song that I could sing.
Welcome back to the Insight Teen Hour. My name is Frederick. I'm from Insight Treatment Programs. And in the studio today, I've got Stephen Onuru from StephenOnuru.com is the website. Stephen is a psychotherapist and a divorce mediator, and he's here today. He's talking about, well, he's telling us about how narcissistic behaviors and narcissistic parents can sort of interfere when a divorce is taking place. Stephen, so before we move any further, I know you've said a lot of great things today on the show and giving parents some advice. If somebody out there is curious about how to get hold of you because they have some additional questions, and maybe they're in a tough spot and need a bit of support, how can they reach you, Stephen?
Yeah, I think, you know, I can give out my phone number, but people usually don't remember that or write that down. If they go to Pasadena Divorce Mediation, you want to look for my website. It's Stephen Unruh, and Unruh is U-N-R-U-H, U-N-R-U-H. It's just simply StephenUnruh.com. Unruh means unruly. <That's> But you won't find that on the website. So just go to StephenUnruh.com.
Great, Stephen. So, Stephen, I know when we spoke before the show, and often we've talked about how some of these things get exacerbated during a divorce, obviously, right? A lot of emotions comes up. Everything gets, you know, yeah, gets way worse than it was before, typically. What have you got to say on that point? Do you have any advice? What do you typically see in the process as this starts going on?
Yeah, so, you know, as people start to separate, whether they're moving towards a legal separation or a divorce, they're going to start the process of separating and having a parenting plan. What I do see is that when the child is going back to the home where they feel unheard, where they feel blamed, where they feel scared, you know, they're going back to the house with a parent that is probably a little bit more dysfunctional than the other one, they have so much anxiety. And so on Sundays, because I've also done custody evaluations post-divorce, sometimes there's custody battles after divorce, I get involved in those. And that's especially obvious at that point. The divorce has occurred. These kids are living with different parents, 50-50. But when they get ready on Sunday to go back to, you know, whether moms or dads, they're angry, they act out, they start causing problems because they don't know how to say, I don't want to go to his house. I don't want to go over to mom's house. They don't know how to really say that. Maybe they start to verbalize it, but they'll oftentimes just have a meltdown, and you need to be aware of that. You need to calm them down, talk to them, ask them what's going on. Oh, I know you're not very happy over there, but you've got to go. That's what we're doing right now. You know, you're still a minor. So you can still console them, but just be patient. Be aware that the day before, they're going to have probably some acting out. And the same is true when they're younger and they come back. Younger children under 11 are kind of a mess when they come back. And I have parents every single week tell me this. I mean, just for years, parents have said, oh, my goodness, Friday night or whatever night it is, Friday night, I mean, they're just a mess. They're angry. They're yelling. They don't want to do their homework. They throw their book down on the floor, you know, because they're so upset. But they're unregulated. And so what happens is that maybe over the next week when they're with the other parent, they slowly become regulated. They begin to calm down. They kind of settle in. They see their friends. They get their homework done. But this dysregulation is really, really painful for kids because they're going to a home where the parent is always dysregulated, where the parent is easily upset. You know, the fact with a narcissistic parent is that they're unpredictable, and the kids, this causes so much anxiety for children. They don't know if they're going to be yelled at or given a hug. They don't know if they're going to have no food or a great dinner. They don't know what to expect, and it changes so quickly. The moods shift so quickly and so dramatically when someone's a narcissist. There tends to be a little bit of bipolar with narcissism. And so... You know, the kid, when he comes back to the parent that he feels safer with, he's going to have a day where he needs to learn how to kind of get this out of his system and calm down.
Mm-hmm. Now, definitely a lot of unrest, right, in these situations. Yeah. A lot of and a lot of things that the kids are sort of scared about, right? I often feel that teens going through this, that they're really scared about what the future is going to bring. Are they going to, you know, how is this going to end up? Am I going to be taken away from dad or mom? Am I going to, you know, I'm not going to be allowed to see this and that? I mean, there's just a lot of uncertainty. And I think for teens, that can be very scary, right?
And make them
want to go out and react.
Right. And, you know, and the horrible thing is that sometimes there's parents with no ability to understand their children and how their children feel. I mean, I've seen this. Sadly, I see it more often than I want to. But I've had a parent tell their child that if they complain anymore, they're never going to see their dad again, you know, or they're going to be taken away. I mean, literally, I have a kid who I've had in the past, kids who've opened up and shared with me, this is how I'm being threatened. This is what I'm fearing. And that's really deep psychological abuse. But you know, it happens. And I have to work with that and work through that and challenge the parent. And obviously, you know, these kids are really afraid sometimes to talk about what's happening because they've been threatened in that way. And that's a very extreme situation, but it does happen.
Of course. Stephen, I've had a couple of parents asking me as we were referring, you know, clients to you. I have some parents asking, so what about a mediation process? Doesn't that take way longer than if it goes through the court system? Like, what typically would you tell parents when it comes to the timeline on things like this?
Okay, so it's just the opposite. When you divorce in California, it's so much longer. Mediation generally is done in 6 months. That's absolutely the average with all of my cases. I file in 13 different courthouses. I've worked with a couple different hundred judges. And the average, whether it's more difficult and whether it lasts a year or whether it goes really quickly, the average is 6 months. In court right now in California, especially because of budgeting, about, I think, 15 years ago, we had 21 courthouses shut down in Los Angeles. And then with COVID, we're kind of coming out of it. But because of COVID, they weren't seeing people. Cases have been set back. So right now, it's 4 years in the court system if you go through the course. So this is a kid going into high school, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. His entire high school education, 4 years of his life, his parents are going to be in court fighting and hating one another and divorcing. And that's traumatizing, utterly traumatizing.
Absolutely. That is a long time. And Stephen, how often throughout that period of time do you typically then consult or see the family? Like, is it a daily basis? Is it a weekly basis? Is it only through phone? Is it primarily in person? How does that process look like?
Good question. You know, when someone's calling me for the very first time, I set up a Zoom meeting and try to have that with both parties. So both parties feel that I'm representing them equally and fairly. And we have a free intake through that Zoom meeting. I answer questions and I evaluate what is their biggest concern. Well, my biggest concern is this house. My biggest concern is where the kids are going to be in school. My biggest concern is my, you know, business, buying her out of my business. So we have a free intake. And that happens over Zoom. And then if they're near one of my offices, then we start the process in person if they want. It's interesting. I do have a lot of cases that continue on to use Zoom, but I am available for in-person meetings. And generally, our meetings are probably every 3 weeks because it's very emotional. It's not like therapy where people want to come in for therapy. You know, they're getting their financials ready. There's things they need to, you know, organize. So we'll meet either by Zoom or face-to-face every 3 weeks. In between that time, there's a lot of emails and phone calls. I didn't get this information. This wasn't clear. When are you going to get me that document? So it's perfectly fine to have communication in between those meetings to clarify issues or answer questions.
Great. Well, Stephen, unfortunately, our Inside Teen Hour is about to be up, but thank you very much for all the valuable information you've given us today. Really appreciate it, Stephen.
Great, thank you. And maybe let me just...
And keep,
I'll spell
Please go ahead.
I'll spell my last name for the audience. It's UNRUH, UNRUH, UNRUH. And there was a senator long time ago. I think he was the state treasurer, Jesse UNRUH. The spelling's the same, but younger couples won't know who that guy is. But you can just go to StephenUNRUH.com to find me.
Great. And I can confirm that Stephen will absolutely pick up your call and,
yep.
and get back to you. So don't hesitate to reach out.
Yeah, absolutely. My phone number's on my website, and it's very easy to get a hold of me. It's always a pleasure being on this show. I appreciate your work, Frederick, your questions and your insight. And I know that kids are finding help and healing through your fantastic ministry.
Thank you very much, Stephen. I appreciate it. And thanks to all of you guys out there listening. Tune in next week at 2 o'clock on Monday. That's when we talk about teen mental health. I know next week we're going to have some guests on the show from Tarsana Treatment, who's going to talk to us about what treatment options that there is for families that have Medi-Cal insurance and doesn't have private insurance or can't afford treatment out of pocket. So we're going to get a lot of good information from the team over there on next Monday at 2 p.m. You're listening to KHTS 98.1 FM.